Okay, so I guess we'll get started. Thank you for coming. So SDL is kind of a pretty simple graphics library. That is why we are recommending it if you're doing like a two-dimensional thing. Since you guys, well, let me just say this for everyone. So if you're doing like just a plain like card game or board game, I think SDL is the easiest library to use. You can put text on the screen, so it will support kind of all of the types of things that you'd want to do. If, you know, your program is very, like, text-based and you need, like, text boxes that you can type into in chat, GTK might be a different library you'd want to consider, but I think SDL is nice for just kind of basic 2D graphics. You can make sounds, you can put images on the screen, you can like drag the images around, you can do all these kind of nice things in a very easy way. So SDL is great for that, and if you're doing open, or if you want to do a 3D thing, then you definitely don't want SDL or GTK. You'll need to use OpenGL, but I don't think too many people are planning on doing 3D stuff. So good. All right, so I'm just going to show you, like, walk you through some basic code I wrote a while ago, which is just kind of tutorials for SDL, starting at kind of very simple stuff and making our way towards slightly more complicated stuff. But at the end of the day, I just want to give you an idea of how you interact with SDL. And so we're not going to do anything terribly complicated, just show you some of the things SDL can do and kind of where you would start. So basically, I'll give you like a template that you can copy, and I'll make it available on the seminars page of CS50 sometime tonight or tomorrow. But you can just copy this template, and then after you copy the template, you can just kind of figure out, well, you should be in a good place to figure out where you're going to start actually inserting your code and how you're going to make, like, in you guys' case, a board pop up, like a board image, and then put pieces on the board, or if you're doing a card game, how you can make cards pop up and click them and do fun stuff. So again, this is only going to focus on the graphics side of things. I mean, you'll obviously need to have like some kind of rules encoded somewhere in your code for, like, you know, if you're doing chess, you need to have the rules of chess so that after the player clicks the screen, you know, to make a move and then clicks the screen again or whatever, you'll need to validate that that was a legal move to make, and that's a kind of a whole separate non-graphical area. But the graphical end will focus on getting input from the user, you know, if they're clicking around or using the arrows or whatever on your window, and then if you want to display images and or play sounds, the graphics library can help you with that. Okay, so we're going to get started with the simplest one. I apologize, my laptop's graphics drivers are terrible right now, so the programs do not really run as they should. They run very, very slowly. So let me just show you the program. It's going to seem incredibly lame, especially on my graphics card. It's ever so slightly less lame if you run it on your own computer or whatever. So you can click and drag this, and when the image is clicked, so usually the image follows around the mouse cursor very closely, but because my graphics card is so bad, it's not doing it. So as long as the image is clicked, it's green, and then as soon as you let go, the image is supposed to go to red, which it will eventually do when the graphics card catches up. But basically the idea of this simple example is that you can click on this image. Oh, it finally went red. So you can click on this image, you can drag it around, and then when you let go, the image turns red again. So again, it will look better when you run it on your own computer, but hopefully you get the idea of what I'm trying to show you, even though it's not rendering so well on my laptop. All right. Oh, come on. All right. So since you missed it, it's just like you click on the image, and when you click, the image turns green, and it follows your mouse cursor around, and then when you let go again, the image turns red again, and it doesn't follow your mouse around anymore. All right, so we're just going to kind of look through the code for this, and this is kind of the starting, so the example is called mouse, and This is the starting point that I'd probably recommend that you start. You just copy this file over, take off my name, take off the parts that's specific to the to this program, and just use that kind of. There's like a bunch of setup functions that are happening, and like a while loop that's there, which we'll see, and just use those except to start inserting your own code. So I think this will make more sense in a second. So let's not worry about these functions yet at the top. Okay, so we have main. So first of all, just to give you an idea of what's happening with these graphics libraries is they control the flow of everything. So there's a kind of like a while true loop, and the and this is kind of, this loop belongs to the graphics library almost. So the kind of general pattern that happens is you say while true, you wait for an event to happen. So an event is like the user hits a key, or the user moves the mouse, or the user clicks on the mouse. These are all different kinds of events that SDL knows how to detect. And when an event happens, then you figure out what the event was using switch statements, which we'll see. And after you figure out what has happened, you need to kind of respond in the correct way. So responding the correct way could mean playing a sound. In the cases of these examples, it's going to mean moving the image to a new location and getting rid of the old image. So when we move the red box over, so first of all, when it's clicked, we know we need to turn the red box green. And then when we move the box over, we want to put a black box where the old box used to be, and then put a green box, you know, where the new box is supposed to be. Does that make sense to everyone? All right. So basically, a lot of SDL code needs to happen beforehand. So let me just point out, so this stuff right here, these lines right here, these first five or so, six lines, seven lines, these are like declaring SDL variables that are going to help us later on. These next few lines of code, the ints and the bools, these are kind of specific to our program, but you might want to use variables similar to that in your program. Like, for instance, what do you think bool quit might do? Or bool paused? What? Right, exactly. So these variables keep track of what state we're in the program. So the three pieces of state I'm interested in are whether or not the program is paused. Why do you think we'd want to care about that? Right, so if it's paused and then the user clicks and drags, we just want to not respond. We want to know when it's time to quit, and we'll see that variable come in handy. And then we also want to know when the box is clicked. Why would we want to know that? Right, so that the box can go green when it's clicked and go red again when it's unclicked. And I'm sorry that the demo was so bad. It would make more sense if you saw a good demo, but you'll have to do it on your own computer. And then you'll be like, ah, that's what he was talking about. Okay, so the first thing that needs to happen before we call any like SDL-specific or SDL functions that ask the graphics library to do something for us, we need to tell SDL to initialize itself. So that's what this line of code right here does. So you just call SDL init, and you can read about the arguments you pass it. I think SDL init video will be fine. This is kind of just magic code you need to put in there so that the SDL library can prepare itself to do things. This is the kind of stuff you just want to copy over from this file, because it should work for most of the stuff you're doing. If you wanted audio, for instance, you might need to pass another thing into here saying that you were going to want audio in your program. But for now, just start with this, and when you start to add features, you might need to change these init calls so that SDL can prepare itself properly for whatever you're planning on doing. All right, so you know, we check to make sure we're able to initialize the video. This at exit call just ensures that this function called SDL quit is called before the program exits. Again, this is just more magic code that needs to happen. All right, so this next line is kind of more magic code, but this line is pretty important. So we're catching the return value of SDL set video mode in an SDL surface. So surfaces are very important. Surfaces are kind of conceptually, like, you can think of them like rectangles, and you can paint onto these surfaces, like a canvas. You can paint onto the surfaces, and then you can move the surfaces around. So the screen surface is kind of just the background of the window. So when we set video mode, it's going to return to us a handle to that surface, a screen, and this screen variable just means like the background. Does that make sense to everyone? So what kinds of things do you think we need to tell when we ask for a screen variable? What do you think SDL is going to want to know in order to return to us a proper screen variable? Sorry. You can cheat. Good. So it's going to want to know the screen width and the screen height, which I've pound defined to be 640 and 480, I think. And it's going to want to know some other stuff. You can always just kind of Google the function if you're confused what you're passing it. That's really the best way to approach this whole thing. So you could just type this into Google and it would help you out. But basically we're passing the width, the height, I don't even remember what this is, and this is telling it how we want it to render the images. So double buffering is just a way to kind of improve the performance. I know it's hard to believe after seeing my program run so badly, but I promise that's because of the video card. Double buffering is like a technique that graphics libraries can do that make it so that when you change to a new screen, it doesn't flicker the old screen. But anyway, you can read up on these things. For now, you can probably just copy this code too. So this is all, again, just setup. Okay, cool. So at this point, we're ready to draw on the screen. So SDL is ready to go. We've called, you know, the magic secret sauce of functions, and the functions have enabled us to be ready to do things with SDL. So the first thing we want to do, perhaps it's in the program, as you saw, it had a black background. So the screen, which is going to be our background, we just want to fill it with all black. So if we look up this fill rect function, maybe this will be a good exercise for us to do. So I'm going to Google SDL fill rect. Whoa, that's a little bigger than I intended. And look, I've already been here. So this function performs a fast fill of the given rectangle with some color. So remember, we're thinking of this screen as a canvas which we can paint on, and we just want to fill that whole canvas with something. So it needs to know the destination. That's like the rectangle we're going to paint it. That's this thing. And then if we would like to grab, if we'd like to start from a certain rectangle and copy it over, we can, So if we want to like specify like a certain smaller area, like a certain smaller area to color on, then we can do so with this SDL rect, which is just like a rectangle, and we can specify where we want to do this fill rect. But in most cases, when we call fill rect, we just want to blank out the whole screen. So we're just going to leave that null. And then this uint color is a very mysterious thing. It seems kind of obvious what it's doing, but if we wanted it to do something different, it's a little unclear how we do something different. So what I mean by this is, it's obvious that we need to, if we want to fill it with a different color other than black, we'd presumably need to put a different integer in here. But it's unclear how we'd come up with that integer. There's a tutorial file in here, which kind of explains this code again, kind of what I'm doing. And there is a function. So if we wanted to change it to a different color, we'd call, so the way we produce this color, so this int represents a color, right? So if we want to paint it magenta, we put in some int. If we want to paint it lime green, we put in another int. If we want to paint the background yellow, we put in a different int. So it's unclear how we would generate those ints. This function called SDL map RGB is the function that we would generate those colors with. So you will need this at some point. I mean, because you're going to probably want to paint the background of your card game green, or you'll want to paint some box some color. So STL Map RGB will help you produce that color. So don't worry about this. You can just kind of copy screen arrow format. But this is the important part. This translates a red, green, and blue value, which is kind of a natural way to think of colors, into the screen, or sorry, into a color. STL Map RGB takes an RGB value, which is a color we can kind of understand. We understand that 255 red 00 means that it's going to be bright red, or 02550 means that it's going to be bright green. So that's like a color we can kind of interpret. We can look up. And then this STL Map RGB returns the int that is what we would need to pass into STL Fill Rect. So the reason I'm showing you this is maybe not so much that this is super important, like this particular function, but this kind of sleuthing is what's hard, right? So you need to like look up STL Fill Rect, and then you need to say, takes this uint32 called color. Then you scratch your head and you say, well, I don't know how to generate a uint32 color. So then you need to Google around or ask one of your TFs, and we'll help you kind of approach this. But often it will be a different function call that generates the parameter that you need to pass into this other function. So this is how programming kind of in a bigger context where you don't know the library that well and you're kind of learning the library, that's where it can be difficult, is figuring out this kind of thing. Does that make sense, everyone? All right, so we could change the color. We won't for now. All right, so okay, so we just painted it black. So now what we want to do is we want to load the images. So I have two images, which are called red box and green box, and they're literally just JPEG images that just have, one has a red box in it and one has a green box. It's just like was hard-coded it to be red and hard-coded to be green, and they're just sitting in my folder. So like if I ls, you'll see greenbox.jpg right here, and redbox.jpg here, and you could replace these obviously with your own JPEG files. All right, so okay, so we're going to load the images. So when we load the images, given this kind of framework I've discussed already, what do you think the image load is going to return? What type? Surface. Right, exactly. So it's going to return an STL surface, because you know, you can conceptually think of these images as canvases, and this is kind of the basic building block of STL. Is you can, you know, start with this black surface which you're going to paste onto the background, and then you're going to draw a green surface on that black surface, or draw a red surface on that black surface, and that will take this other canvas and kind of copy paste it to the first canvas. Cool. So now we have ways to get to the red image and the green image. And, you know, obviously, if either of these images fail to load, which would probably be due to the fact that they weren't where they're supposed to be. You know, if I mistyped red box and the image was actually called red box one or something, then it wouldn't be able to load redbox.jpg because it couldn't find it. So you need to always kind of check to make sure that if someone screwed up your folder and changed something, that your program doesn't crash. It just ends in a nice way. All right, so we've done that. All right, so initially, when we first launched that program, remember the red box showed up in the upper left-hand corner. So we could start it wherever we want, but that seems like a logical place to start it. So what do you think this image X and image Y variables correspond to? Right, the coordinates of where we're going to draw the upper left part of the whatever image we're talking about. So in our program, image X and image Y are just variables that we're keeping track of so that we know where to draw those rectangles. Does that make sense? Okay, so presumably when we start moving around the shape, like dragging it around, these are the variables that are going to be changing that are going to cause the shape to move. All right, so we still haven't started looping yet. So why do we? So we're going to call this draw function, which I'll show you in a second. But the draw function basically takes the thing you want to draw on, and well, I guess let's take a look at it. So this is a function I wrote, just so that it's like a, it's not an SDL function. It's just at the top of my file. So it takes a first SDL surface, which is the screen that we want to draw onto. Then it takes an SDL surface, which is the image we want to draw onto the screen. So it's kind of like the first one's the destination, the thing that's going to be copy-pasted to. And the second thing is the thing that you're going to copy-paste onto the destination. And then we take an int x and an int y, which are just image x and image y in our case. So essentially all draw does is call this blit surface function. But we need to do a little bit of setup first to give blit surface the right arguments. So this is another case where you're going to see that blit surface is what you're trying to do. You know, when you Google it, well, maybe you wouldn't be so clear because the word fast blit might not be in your vocabulary. It's not really in my vocabulary, but blit surface means it's going to, think of it as copy-paste. So it's going to do a copy-paste from some source destination onto some destination surface. So this blit is how SDL actually does the copy-paste. And the arguments that blit surface needs to take is it needs to take a source rectangle. So that's if we don't want to copy the whole source over, but only part of the source, we could specify which part of the source we want to copy over. And when you're pasting an image, you just almost always want to just copy the whole thing. So you just leave this second argument as null. And then the third argument is the destination where you'd like to copy-paste this image to somewhere else, this destination. And then this fourth argument is, again, this kind of mysterious, like, what the heck is an SDL rect? And, like, why don't they just take an int x and int y? So if you look up SDL rect, it'll turn out it's just a very simple structure that just has, like, an x and a y that you need to set. But, again, this is one of those frustrating things to figure out. So this draw function is nice because it works in a way that's at least clearer to me. It takes an int x and an int y, and that's where you're going to draw it. So it will make the SDL rect. It will fill the SDL rect with the proper information, and then it will make a call to SDL blit surface to do the drawing in a way that we can appreciate and understand. Does that make sense to everyone? So this draw function is really quite simple, but feel free to use it, you know, in your own code, or if you want to modify it, that's totally fine. But that will help you kind of draw something from somewhere onto like the screen in a more reasonable way, I think. But you could just, instead of calling draw, you could obviously just make an SDL rect with the proper x and the proper y every time you wanted to perform a draw operation, and that would work too. All right. Okay, so where are we right here? So we just drew, what did we just draw? Right, so we drew the original red box at 0, 0. So we have this full screen, and in the top left corner, well, I guess the top left corner for you guys, we have this red box. And that's all we have right now. So we've kind of got the initial state set up. Now it's time to start getting input from the user. So you will definitely have a loop like this in your code. So this is kind of the main control loop. So this is the loop that the basic pattern, as I said, was takes input from the user and reacts to input. And reacts to input could mean go call some crazy library function that checks if your chess move is valid. It could be updating the state of your game to reflect the state that's now on the screen. It could mean all kinds of things. But in the end, you need to be able to take input from the users and then do something and react to it. And then once you're in a state where you're ready for more input from the users, you can have those functions return, and then the while loop will loop back around again and wait. So what's happening here is a while not quit. So we're going to keep polling for events while it's not time to quit yet. So here, this is called listening to an event. So, the comments do not have particularly good English. I'll fix it up before I put it online. So this just kind of waits for an event. So it just sits here, doesn't return, hum-de-hum-de-hum, and then finally the user comes along and clicks on the mouse or hits a button. So suddenly event STL poll event gets very excited. It returns this event. So this is perplexing, right? STL poll event takes ampersand event as an argument. And I say that it returns the event in event. So how does that work? Any ideas? So notice we're passing the pointer of event into STL poll event. So that's like passing the pointer of a structure into STL poll event. So what do you think STL poll event can do? So right, so STL poll event has the address of your event, so that it can change your event to have the correct return information, because it has access to, so you're passing access to your variable, so it can go change the variable. So this is a very common thing in like C libraries, right? So they want STL poll event to return, the official return type is probably just like a true or false saying whether or not it worked out or something like that. But the actual return information is being encoded in an argument that's being passed into the STL poll event function. So the STL poll event function is modifying the event in such a way so that we'll be able to get useful information out of it. So what types of useful information do you think we want to be able to get out of the event? Like, what would you want to know about an event? Right, good. So we want to know what type it is. Good. So the type is like if it was a mouse button up, which means a mouse was released, a mouse button down, which means a mouse was clicked. If it was a mouse motion, which just means the cursor is moved. If it was a keyboard, the downstroke of a keyboard, so like when I hit space down and hold it down or whatever, or the upstroke of a keyboard, which is generally the thing you want to respond to. And then specifically, you know, if it's a mouse motion, or if it's like a mouse button down, what else would you probably want to know about that mouse button down?
Which button?
Okay, yeah, great. So which button, if it was a left click or a right click? What else would you want to know? Great. So slightly more generally than that. So not only is it clicking on the box or off the box, but just where is it clicking? So what coordinates is it clicking on? And then from there, we can tell if it's clicking on the box or clicking off the box. Absolutely. So so that's the kind of things that event will be filled up with, all of this glorious information. So if you see that it's a mouse button up, then suddenly you'll be able to ask for like what coordinates it has and other information you might be curious about. All right, cool. So, so that's the general idea. So we want to react to these things. So, all right, there's a lot of bad comments in here. Anyway, so cool. So what types of, like, what way do we generally want to react? Like, I mean, just let's think at a high level in terms of this really simple program I gave you before we look at the code. What general things do you want to do? Like, when a mouse button is clicked, what might you want to do? Good. So if we're clicking on the object, we're going to want to start, like, drag mode so that we know that we're clicking on the thing. Good. So that's kind of exactly what we're doing. So we're going to, so on an STL mouse button down, we are going to check if we're in the box. So inbox is a function I wrote, and we can see how it works, but it's pretty simple. It needs to know what coordinate was clicked. It needs to know what image X and image Y are, right, which tells us where the image is on the thing. And it needs to know how big the image is, right? Because if you have a giant image, clicking down here is going to be still on the box. But if your image is real small, then clicking down here is not on the box. So we're going to check if we're in the box. That will presumably return true or false. And if we are in the box, then we're going to want to know that now we're kind of in dragging mode. So what the Boolean here is called is box clicked. And we're going to set it to true because we know that the box is now being clicked. So this will tell us a couple things when we go to draw everything. What else will it tell us besides the fact that we need to drag? Remember the other thing that clicking the box does? Exactly. So it'll tell us that when the box is clicked, we want to show the green box. And when it's not clicked, we want to show the red box. So it's going to kind of updating the state of the program right here. You know, it may seem simple, but it will also help us later when we go to draw the update. Cool. And this other thing that we're doing, don't worry about it too much. You can play around with turning it on and off. Basically, it's really hard to show this because the program runs so slowly. So when you run it on your own computer, you can test it. When you click on the box and you try to drag it off the screen, your mouse gets stuck on the edge of the window because you shouldn't be allowed to like drag the box like way off into infinity. So this SDLWM grab input means that, or with the grab on, means that that no matter what they do, they can't get their mouse off of the window. So when I was writing this little tutorial, I decided that if they're clicking on the box, I don't want them dragging it off the window. But at the same time, I don't want their mouse being stuck in the program at all times, because that would be really annoying if your like mouse is trapped in the program. Although if you're doing like a full screen game, it would certainly, or a game that you want the user to like not be allowed out of or whatever, you might want to just always trap the mouse in their game. That would be a reasonable thing to do. So this is kind of, this line is just about whether or not the mouse is allowed to move out of the window. So when do you think I'm going to turn grab off? And I realize you can just cheat, but when you let go of the mouse, suddenly now you're free to kind of move your mouse outside the window. And you can see this. It's kind of cool. So hopefully you're getting an idea of like how the SDL library helps you. You know, it's doing kind of a lot of the hard work for you, right? It's drawing on your screen fancy stuff. It's doing this fancy input detection. So that's kind of where the library comes in. It's also detecting, you know, from the hardware when you click on a key, it's detecting what key was clicked or hit, what mouse button was clicked or whatever. Cool. So, good. So, I'll talk about this quickly. So SDL quit is a special case, like when the X on the upper right of your window is clicked. That's an SDL quit command. And you can choose to not respond to that command. If you're a nice person, you will respond to that command because you would like users to be able to exit by clicking on the X in your upper right corner. That's just kind of an expectation. Everyone understands what I'm talking about? Like the window pops up. You'd like the X to actually close the window. But you have to actually tell it, when you get an SDL quit command, hey, actually return 0, quit out of the program. At the same time, we also respond to when it's a key up, when a queue is hit, or when escape is hit. Those are the other ways we're going to allow it to exit the program. So if we see that it's a key up, which is this case SDL key up, now we want to check, okay, well, what key was actually pressed? So that's this second switch statement in here. And these are just kind of cases you need to look up. So if it's an SDL keyboard under bar Q or an SDL keyboard under bar escape, then we just know we want to quit, so we return 0. All right. So we are not going to be willing to update. Do I have... I'm a little confused. All right. Well, there's no support for pause right now. Let's add support for pause. How would we add support for pause? So there's this pause Boolean, which is always false right now. Where would we want to set the pause Boolean to true, perhaps? Right, exactly. So we'd want to say, okay, well, was it the... P key that was hit. Presumably that pauses. So what do we want to do if the P key was hit? Right, so we want to switch the pause bool. So we're going to set paused to equal whatever not paused is, if that makes sense. So if paused was false, we want to set paused to true. If paused was true, we want to set paused to false. So now we've added support for pause. The other thing we need to do is we need to make sure that we only are willing to redraw the screen if it's not paused, if the game is not paused. So if the game is paused, we just don't want to redraw the screen because we don't want to respond to user input in any way, shape, or form. All right. So here, so now we've kind of figured out what the user clicked, what they're trying to do. Maybe we've updated the internal state. But now we need to actually, let me just show you. So on mouse motion, notice that we're not doing anything yet either. So we haven't really handled mouse motion properly. All right, so now we've, for the most part, gotten the input from the user. And that's cool and all. So now what we need to do is we need to redraw the screen so that, you know, if the user did something, they actually see something different happening. If we don't redraw the screen, what that would mean is that that original screen where we put the black up and we put the red in the upper left corner, that screen would just stay there forever unless we were willing to redraw the screen. So notice we are redrawing the screen in this loop. So every time the user hits something, we react to it in whatever way, and then we redraw the screen. Okay, so we don't really have much to do when we redraw if the box is not clicked, because, you know, the operating system takes care of the mouse movements, and nothing really needs to change if the box is not clicked, because you can just kind of move your cursor all over that program, and nothing happens to the background until the box becomes clicked, and then we need to do stuff. So let's assume for a second that the box is not clicked. We're just going to redraw the background as all black. We're not going to do any of this if box click stuff. Now we're going to redraw the square at the place where it's supposed to be located, which will just be the same image X and image Y that it used to be. And notice since box is not clicked, we're going to draw a red image. If box were clicked, we would draw a green image. And then we're going to do this SDL flip. So let me explain what's going on here. All right. Is it okay if I go to the board quickly? Okay. Okay, so we have this screen, right? So this was our screen. This is what's showing to the user. Oops, sorry. So let's say we moved the box to the right. So we have this other screen right here, and this is kind of the canvas we're working on. So while this guy stays on the SDL screen, which is what's showing to the user, this is the new canvas we're working on. So this is the changed canvas we're working on. Maybe now we want to draw the box over here. So we finish all of the details, and here the details are kind of simple. We just want a black screen, and then we want a red box maybe, or maybe a green box because maybe it's being moved now or whatever. So we work on this canvas while that canvas is still on the screen. And then when we're done with our masterpiece, we're like finally ready to put the new canvas on the screen. We call SDL flip, and that's this double buffering idea. So while this guy is showing on the screen, we can work on the canvas over here, and then when we're finally ready to present this canvas to the world, we do SDL flip, and this goes to the screen. So the alternative would be we just write directly on the screen. And why would that be a drawback, perhaps? Right, exactly. So if it takes a while to do this update, so presumably we wipe the whole screen black and then we draw the new rectangle, well, you might see a flicker for a second, right, where the screen went black and covered up the old rectangle before the new rectangle appears, and you don't want that flicker. So that's what this double buffering thing buys you, and SDL just kind of does it for free. So you just can kind of use this code. But that's the idea of what's happening. I think it's important that you at least understand the general idea. Thanks. Okay, so that's what this flip does. So after we're done making this new canvas, we flip, and that's what builds the new screen. So it does this double buffering automatically. Okay, so now we still have a boring program because we still haven't considered what we're going to do with the box when the box was clicked. So when the box was clicked, we want to figure out how far it was moved, if that makes sense. So we're going to keep track of the old x and the old y. So whenever the mouse button goes down, we're going to set the old x and the old y to be where the thing starts before it's moved at all. So now we're going to see, okay, well, now where is the mouse located? Where is the mouse located during this mouse motion? And we're going to see that it's located at some new x and some new y. So if the old x and the old y, the mouse started at 0, 0, and then the mouse moved down 10 pixels and right 10 pixels, so now we're at 10, 10, well, we'd want to compute how far the box should move. Well, that's a pretty easy computation, right? We just see how far over to the right we are, which is event button dot x, minus how far we were when we started, which was the old x. And then we want to do the same for y. And so that's what this delta x and delta y is how far the image has moved. So now we simply need to update image x and image y to reflect this delta x and delta y. So we just set image x equal to image x plus whatever delta x is. And delta x could be negative if we move the image to the left. Same for image y. And then let's not worry about this code. You can uncomment it and see what happens. So now image x and image y hold the new state for where the new rectangle is. And now we simply want to draw either a green box if the box is being clicked right now, or a red box if the box is not being clicked. So we just do that. We draw it at the image x and image y, which are the new locations, and then we're done. So we flip the image onto the screen, and now we have our new image. We just keep doing this loop until finally the user hits Q or escape or closes it with the X, and then the loop will end. Or I think in that case, we just return 0. But if the loop ends, then we can free these surfaces. It's a good idea to try to free your surfaces, but it gets a little hard to always free things as maniacally as you did in like Puff. So don't worry about it too much. Try to if you can, but if you can't, it's not the end of the world. So does that make sense to people? All right, so let's just get a little bit more complicated for a second, and this isn't too bad, but so this is another program I wrote. This one's pretty similar. We have these other little boxes, which are similarly red, and when they clicked, they become green. And this is like if you wanted to make like a tiles game or something. Wow, this is really bad. Come on, you. Okay. So when you click the image, it turns green. It brings it to the front of the screen. And then when you unclick it and the graphics card catches up, sorry, this is ridiculous. Okay, it turns back red again. And notice the kind of cool thing is that when you click on a background image, so you see how this image is behind this image? Can you tell from where you are? Okay, so when I click on this one and I wait for it to react, well, eventually it will bring that image to the front. So this kind of implies that there needs to be some ordering with which Sorry, this is just absurd. Come on. Oh, there we go. So there needs to be some ordering with which we draw these images, right? Because the images that are conceptually like furthest down from us are drawn first, and then we keep drawing the higher and higher images as we go along. So what data structure do you think I might use to implement this idea? So each image needs to have its own layer. Well, I guess I'll tell you since. So I have a linked list here, right? So the linked list starts off with the images in some random like ordering, and the front of the linked list, I think the front of the linked list is the images that are furthest back on the linked list, and then the very back of the linked list is the images that are at the very top. So kind of the natural way to draw is to iterate through the linked list and just draw each rectangle along the way. And if you do that, then you'll get kind of this behavior. So what's the other thing you need to do so that it has this effect that when you click on an image, it brings it to the top? Right, exactly. So when you detect, so first of all, you need to figure out which image you're clicking on, which is non-trivial, right? Because if I click right here, which is the border between two images, like both images cover this, you need to figure out that, oh, I'm clicking the, you find the first image from traversing the linked list backward, the first image that fits, that's the image that's on top that you're clicking on. So that's non-trivial, that function, is to figure out which box you clicked on in the first place. And then the other thing you need to do is you need to take that out of the linked list, mend the old linked list, and then put that box at the end of the linked list to signify that it's now on top. So as long as you do all of this state stuff properly, drawing should be really easy, right? You just iterate through the linked list, draw the first one, draw the second one, draw the third one, so that each one goes on top of the previous ones. But then at the end, hopefully you have this linked list properly done so that you can do that drawing properly. All right, so I'm not going to bore you too much with the details. Maybe I'll just show you quickly. Oh, boy. Come on. There we go. So let me just show you quickly how that kind of code could fit into this. So we need this linked list. This linked list. So it has an image info type, which contains each guy's X, Y, and the image it's supposed to be printing. And then just a doubly linked list that goes forward and backward so that we can iterate in both directions. So we have the same inbox function that tests if a mouse click fell within an image. Well, it's very similar inbox function. And the exact same draw function. So here's a find image function. So notice that this just kind of iterates through the linked list backwards. And it just keeps going until it gets to the front of the linked list. And if it detects that the click was within that box, it says, okay, this is the image that was clicked, and it returns that image. And the way it returns it is in this fill me variable. But anyway, you can read the comments. So then we need another function called bringToTop, which is what puts the thing at the very end, which is what you were saying. So you need a function that will do that. And it's kind of ugly. wrote it a while ago. There's probably nicer ways of writing it. Okay. And so now I just wanted to give you an idea. So now when the mouse button is clicked, instead of just doing the kind of simplistic thing we did before to see if the giant box was being clicked on, now we need to go find the image in the linked list. So we call this find image function. And now if this current image that we're trying to find is not null, we need to bring it to the top. Well, first of all, we need to set image clicked equals true, and we need to bring it to the top, and we will also grab input in the same way. And then, presumably, when we go to draw, we're going to paint the background. We are going to iterate through the linked list, just drawing each image, and then we're going to flip it onto the screen. So I guess the main idea I wanted to get across is you can do more complicated things, even if this is kind of a stupid example because the game is not that cool or whatever. And that's kind of what allows you to, I mean, you're responding to input in the proper way, and then knowing how to draw it out, you can still do complicated things even with, sorry, this makes no sense. Anyway, it's the same idea even for more complicated things. All right, let's just take a quick break to change the tape. I'm almost done, but I wanted to say one or two more things. So I would, first of all, encourage you to just kind of play with these examples and try to make sure you understand them. I think that's a good first step to starting your program. And then if you're having trouble kind of mapping this to whatever project you're doing, you know, talk to a TF or talk to your advisor. We can probably help you. But it's important that you kind of understand this general loop, this input loop, and then reacting to that input by drawing a new board. That's kind of like the big concept today. So let me just show you two other small things you can do. Oops, not mouse. Circles. So this is another silly file. The functionality is very similar to the red box, but the point I was trying to make here is that you can make this target shape, and this is not coming from any JPEG. You'll notice that, you know, when I LS this folder, there was no JPEG in here. So that's just to say that you can draw your own shapes in SDL, and I just want to show you quickly the idea about how you would go about doing this.
Sorry, would you mind showing that shape again?
Oh, sure.
Off the screen a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. One. Oh, come on. Yeah, pretty much. There we go. So it's a little hard to see, but it's basically just concentric circles. The red one is the biggest circle, and then the blue one is inside, and then there's a yellow circle, and then there's a green circle. I don't know why I chose the shape, but so the basic idea for how to go about doing this is instead of loading an image, so one kind of route you can go is you can just make images like in Photoshop or Paint or whatever program you like. You can just make images for all of your pieces and for all of your board, for all of your cards. You can just grab images online. Oh, come on. All right. Okay, here it is. So here, what we did was we made an SDL surface. We called it my hand drawn image. And here we made a different function called SDL create RGB surface. And you can read about the inputs we gave it. I think the key point is this 50-50, which is how many pixels wide and long the image is. But feel free to read about it. And then we just drew onto it using this filled circle RGBA function. And there's all kinds of functions. You can draw squares onto it. You can draw letters onto your surface. You can draw whatever you want onto your surface. Yeah.
So you can draw this with SDL.
Right. So SDL is doing the drawing.
The other way you did it, you just imported the image.
Right. So I had some image. Like, it was just a green box, but you could make it a green box that says Thomas or, you know, however you make the image in Paint or Photoshop. And you just load in the whole image and use that image as your surface. But here, we are manually making the surface with SDL. So we could write using SDL's text libraries. We could write on the image. We could draw any of the random assortment of shapes that STL has support for, which you can kind of Google around for. You know, this filled circle RGBA might be a good thing to Google for, because this will be on the same page as other shapes that you're allowed to draw in STL, and whatever they have support for, you can kind of just draw on your own custom-made surface. So that was the point of this demo. And then, it's almost not worth showing this because it's going to be so slow. So this is kind of that's kind of going. All right.
Okay,
that's right. So this is an Etch-a-Sketch program. And this was actually accomplished, I think it was almost by accident, when I was doing section a couple years ago. And the idea was here, well, how do you think this Etch-a-Sketch was accomplished? So remember before we were painting the screen black always when we did that. And I think basically once I forgot to paint the screen black, and it did this kind of cool Etch-a-Sketch-like thing. So it's using the old surface, and it's just updating it with new information. So when I move to the right, it's updating the new point that the red circle's at with a red. So first it replaces the old red circle with a white circle so that the old path shows up in white just to make it kind of look nice. And then it just draws the new circle onto the old surface. So that's just to say that we didn't need to kind of wipe out all of the work we had been doing before by clearing the screen black. We could just add to the new surface and flip it on in the same way. So you can play around with that if you think that's a cool example. But this is just to kind of get you thinking about the model we have for drawing on a rectangle, where you can start from scratch each time if you want to just blank out the whole screen and start from black and draw everything on, or you can just draw the modifications onto the screen and leave whatever was there, whichever one works better for what you're doing. And I can do C, which may or may not react in a reasonable amount of time, and C just kind of does what you would expect. Oh, it's not really working. It would just clear the screen black and then just draw the red circle on again so that it's like you shook your Etch-a-Sketch. It's really not working. Okay, so let me just kind of show you, hopefully, do you mind not filming this? I'm just going to check my email quickly. I don't mind if you three see it, please, thanks. So this is just kind of this is a project that my friend and I did very quickly over the summer just for fun. But the idea, so it's a Chinese card game. It's a Chinese card game, and it works over a network. So these four players would be on different computers, and they would be playing with each other. But it looks kind of like Hearts, albeit not as nice, but kind of now you kind of have the power to make something like this, right? You get a deck of cards. You load all 52 card images, or I guess all 54 card images, since this has jokers. And you lay out the user's hand. So you draw an image here, an image here, an image here, an image here, an image here. And you just keep drawing images. And then when there's something to draw on the board, you draw those images. And you're just placing these rectangles. And then the way this game works is, like, when you click a card, well, it's not going to work since this is just a JPEG, but you would, like, click a card, and then this card would be sent up to the middle. And so you could, when this card is clicked, you can imagine removing it from your hand if it's a valid move, and then just placing it up there. And when there's four cards up there, then you want to clear the table because someone took the trick, kind of like in Hearts. And you can kind of imagine how this whole thing could, you know, piece itself together. And so this was actually written in Python in a library called Pygame. But Pygame is just bindings to the STL functions, or SDL functions. So this is written in SDL. It was a different language, but it just goes to show that you can write SDL in C or Python or other languages, C++, you know, whatever you want to write it in. Okay, cool. Well, thank you for coming. Are there any questions before we conclude? So in terms of what to do from here, I would first make sure you kind of understand the mouse example. If I went over something too quickly or wasn't clear, there's like a tutorial that appears. Like, just read the text document. It explains things in pretty good detail. And just copy that mouse example over and start playing with it. Be like, okay, well, how would I make the background bright yellow? And then be like, okay, well, you know, how would I detect a double? Well, double click is kind of hard. Or there's an SDL function that helps with double click. And then say, okay, well, this image is nice, but I'd rather load a deck of cards, or I'd rather put my board image on there. And then kind of experiment with how you could start drawing pieces on the board, and you get the picture from there. Okay, so good luck. Feel free to email me.
Where are the files going to be?
There's a seminars link on the left of CS50, and it will be under SDL on the seminars link. And my email is this, if you want to email me to ask me questions. I'd be happy to respond. Otherwise, good luck. Sure.